Chapter 5 Death and Impermanence. Once the Buddha was speaking with his disciple Ananda about the causes of death. The Buddha asked, "If there were absolutely no births of any kind anywhere, that is, of gods into the state of gods, of celestials into the state of celestials, of spirits, demons, human beings, quadrupeds, winged creatures, and reptiles, each into their own state. If there were no births of beings of any sort into any state, then in the complete absence of birth, would we discern aging and death?"
"Certainly not, venerable sir," Ananda replied.
"Therefore, Ananda, it is clear that there is one cause, source, origin and condition for aging and death, namely, birth."
Translator, Bhikkhu Bodhi.
We are born to die. Aging and death are our birthday gifts. As the Buddha taught, the cause of death is very simple. It is birth. We don't need to search for any other cause since we are living with that cause within us. We cultivate mindfulness of death and impermanence so that we can accept this reality as it is. Accepting the inevitability of death is healthier emotionally and spiritually than living in delusion. The Buddha said, "Beings who are subject to death often wish, 'May death never come to me.' But wishing for life cannot stop death." Since this is so, the Buddha taught us to meditate on death, and even to use a corpse as an object of contemplation, to train us to face our own mortality without fear or superstition. It is said that if there were a world in which people live for 1,000 years, a Buddha would not appear in that world because its people would not grasp the meaning of impermanence. Even in our own world, in which only a few people live for 100 years, it is difficult to be mindful that death is inevitable. A man who lives to a ripe old age in good health may become proud of his longevity and forget his mortal nature. But if he is mindful of the certainty of death, he will be less arrogant and find it easier to forgive other people's mistakes. We should not wait until old age or until we find out that death is approaching to get ready. Practicing mindfulness of death is the best way to overcome fear and prepare for a peaceful death. In fact, mindfulness is the only way death can be defeated. As the Sutta says, "Mindfulness is the path to the deathless. Negligence is the path to death. The mindful do not die. The negligent are dead already."
3 kinds of death. Everything that comes into existence because of causes and conditions is impermanent. Since we are born as a result of causes and conditions, we are also impermanent. When we understand impermanence well, we understand death well. As we have discussed, everything that exists has 3 moments, a rising moment, a living or peaking moment, and a moment of cessation. Every cell of our physical body, every feeling, perception, thought, and even consciousness itself arises, reaches maturity, and then passes away. This is the nature of all conditioned things. The Buddha taught us to distinguish 3 kinds of death: momentary death, conventional death, and eternal death. Momentary death is the kind of death that is occurring every moment. For instance, the physical cells that make up the body are always dying. Biologists tell us our bones produce 2.5 million red blood cells every second to replace dying cells. At the same time, our feelings, perceptions, thoughts, and consciousness are also dying, and new feelings, perceptions, thoughts, and consciousness arise to take their place. Mental processes change even more rapidly than cells and other physical things. We practice mindfulness to train ourselves to experience these inconceivably rapid mental changes. By contrast, we become aware of the signs of decay of the physical parts of the body only through the marks they leave behind. When a storm is over, we see that trees are down, buildings have collapsed, and water is running everywhere. In the same way, aging reveals itself on the body through wrinkles, loss of teeth, hunched back, slow walk, slow talk, dry throat, weak sight, inability to taste, poor hearing, poor appetite, and grey hair. When we see these changes over time, we recognize that we are born with a one-way ticket. When this process of aging ends, we experience conventional death. Normally, this kind is what people have in mind when they say the word death. But conventional death is just the doorway to a new life. Countless times we face conventional death, and countless times we take rebirth. A full cycle of momentary deaths and rebirths leading to conventional death is called One Life. Another such series is called Another Life. This repeating pattern causes us to suffer tremendously. The goal of Buddhist practice is to end this cycle once and for all. This ending is called eternal death. Both momentary death and conventional death are temporary. Both open a space and time for another birth. Again, we have to go through the process of suffering, losing family and friends, growing old, facing death. But once we die the eternal death, our suffering dies forever. We do not have to endure another cycle of death and rebirth. Every death is a type of cessation, but eternal death is cessation with no further rebirth, or what can be called cessation, never to arise again. This cessation is Nibbana, liberation, freedom from suffering. Nibbana is peace. My near-death experiences. Every night when I go to bed, I think, tonight in my sleep I may die. That idea never bothers me because I have spent the day doing Dharma work. I am happy to die with the satisfaction of a day's good work. I have also had several near-death experiences. They taught me what death means and how it happens. This knowledge helped me overcome any fear of dying. Several times when I was young, I nearly drowned. When I was in primary school, my brother and I had to cross a little creek between our home and the school. Neither of us knew how to swim. My mother was petrified we would drown there. Every day when she heard the school bell, she would stand in the doorway of our house and wait for us. She knew what a magnet the creek was and how my brother and I longed to throw down our books, tear off our sarongs and jump into the cool water. Some days we did. My mother, ever vigilant, would scream at the top of her lungs and we would climb out reluctantly. Once, though, we got away with it. Mother did not see us when we jumped into the water. Right away, I was trapped in a small whirlpool where the stream flowed under a stand of bamboo. I flailed my arms to stay afloat, but the eddy sucked me down with terrifying force. Somehow my brother managed to pull me out. When I was a little older, another brother saved me from drowning in an irrigation creek that had been swollen by monsoon rains into a small river. We never told our parents. We feared what would happen if we did. But my most serious near drowning happened in 1945 when I was almost 18. I was waiting for a train that would carry me to a school for young monks. A novice monk, maybe 8 or 9 years old, invited me to go swimming in the river near the station. Although I knew that I could not swim, how could I say no to this little novice? The novice tightened his underrobe and jumped into the river. After swimming across, he saw me standing on the bank. "Jump!" he shouted. Swallowing my embarrassment, I tightened my underrobe and jumped. Almost immediately, I realized that I had made a big mistake. I struggled for a few moments, then I sank to the muddy bottom, drinking in lots of filthy water. When the novice realized I could not swim, he swam back and tried to hold up my head, but he was too small to pull me out. I panicked and grabbed his underrobe. Naked, he swam to the shallow water and shouted for help. A man jumped into the river right through the window of a restaurant. The novice shouted that I might be dead already, but pointed to the place where he had last seen me. Meanwhile, I had gone down 3 times. The last time I bobbed to the surface, I saw the entire world like a red ball. When I went down for the last time, I remember squatting on the river bottom. Suddenly, I saw a man bending over my body. I thought, what is he doing? I was swimming. When I opened my eyes, the man stopped giving me mouth-to-mouth resuscitation, smiled, and moved away. Then I saw hundreds of people around me who had come to see my swimming adventure. To this day, though I have travelled all over the world and crossed oceans countless times, I am uncomfortable around bodies of water. But these experiences, and several other close brushes with death later in life, have taught me not to be afraid. Having done my best to live by the principles the Buddha taught, I simply say to myself, I have done what I could in my life. Every day when I practice mindfulness meditation, I reflect on the impermanence of everything. This thought makes me feel very peaceful. In my view, this is how we all should die, with the knowledge that everything, including me, is always changing, disappearing, dying. Preparing for death. Each day when we sit down to meditate, we should reflect on death as a part of our practice of mindfulness of the body. Contemplating death's inevitability is a good way for us to prepare for a peaceful death and fortunate rebirth. We remember that life is short, that death is certain, and that we cannot predict when this life will end. Doing so encourages us to practice generosity and loving friendliness, strengthens our dedication to our practice, and arouses feelings of spiritual urgency. When we meditate on death, we say to ourselves words such as the following: Perhaps tomorrow I will die. All those who lived in the past are dead. All those who are now living are dying, and all those who will come into existence in the future will die, without any exceptions. There is no certainty that I will live to finish such and such a project, or until such and such a date. Before I die, I must overcome my greed, disappointment, anger, fear, jealousy, restlessness, worry, sleepiness, conceit, deceptiveness, wish for false reputation, and other deluded states of mind. The Buddha managed to defeat these inner obstacles, but even the Buddha, who attained full enlightenment, eventually succumbed to death. Only by understanding this point deeply and remembering it every day will I gain the courage to face death. We can also reflect on these short sayings of the Buddha as part of our meditation. Death always comes along together with birth. Just as people who have achieved great success in the world have died, so too I must certainly die. I who am dying moment after moment can die in the blink of an eye. The life of mortals is signless. Its length cannot be known in advance. As fruit, when ripe, has to fall, as a potter's earthen jars eventually must all break up, so too does the life of mortals eventually come to an end. Not the least bit stoppable, always going forward, life rushes toward its end like the rising sun to its setting. Cemetery contemplation. Another important aspect of preparing for death is cultivating a realistic attitude. Traditional rituals to honour the dead are often based on fear and superstition or on attachment to the person who died. Superstitions are psychological and emotional outlets for our memories of a loved one who has passed away. Ancestor worship, as practiced in many cultures, likely originated from attachment. It is also possible to be attached to one's own dead body. Some people say, I don't mind dying, but I'm afraid of being buried or cremated. Because of fear, they leave elaborate instructions for what they want done to their body after death. But strong attachment and superstitions make it hard for us to develop mindfulness of death and impermanence. Some people have told me that they find mindfulness of death very unpleasant and wish to skip this part of the meditation. They don't want to think that worms eat the decomposed bodies of their loved ones. But according to Theravada tradition, after the feelings, heat, and consciousness have left, a dead body is like a log. Practically speaking, it is worse than a log. At least a log can be used for fuel. Perhaps when its life force is gone, this body is useful only to medical students who can cut it up to gain knowledge about human diseases. Perhaps one reason for our fear and superstition is that few people these days are lucky enough to see a dead body. Even if there is an opportunity, some people don't take it. They give orders to undertakers to do whatever they want with their dear ones' bodies. They say, I don't want to look at the body of my mother or father. I want to remember my loved ones as they were, alive, in good health. All they do is pay the undertaker's bills. That, in a sense, is a kind of superstition. Actually, at the time of the Buddha, people wrapped dead bodies in a white cloth and deposited them unburied in an outdoor area so that animals could eat them. They wanted even their dead bodies to be of some use to living beings. Monks were instructed to go to these places and collect the shrouds in which corpses had been wrapped. The Buddha's own robe was made of shrouds collected from the cemetery. In addition, after they gained full understanding of mindfulness of the body, the Buddha instructed his monks to contemplate the corpse as an object of meditation. This practice is called cemetery meditation. It is the best way to overcome superstitions about death. Though we may not be able to watch dead bodies decay, as was possible during the Buddha's lifetime, we can use our imagination to contemplate what happens to a body after death. Meditating on this subject is not meant to encourage sadness or other negative emotions. Rather, it is the most realistic way to develop mindfulness of the body's impermanence. However, meditation on the various stages of a corpse requires spiritual maturity and emotional stability. Once you have meditated thoroughly on the other aspects of mindfulness of the body, you may be ready to practice cemetery contemplation. First, imagine a dead body in the cemetery, 1, 2, or 3 days after death. Then compare your living body with that body with thoughts such as these. This is the nature of my body. It will become like this dead body. This result is unavoidable. 2, 3, or 4 days after death, my body is bloated, discolored, festered, stinky. It has no feelings, perceptions, or thoughts. It rots. Animals eat it. The flesh disappears. The blood dries out. Sinews break down. The bones separate. Bones also decay. They become porous and slowly are reduced to powder and dust. One day, when a big gust of wind blows, even this dust will disappear. We can also reflect on these short sayings of the Buddha as part of our meditation. When vitality, heat, and consciousness depart from this physical body, then it lies there cast away, food for others, without volition. Before long, this body will lie cast away upon the ground, bereft of all consciousness, like a useless block of wood. Key points for mindfulness of death. The Buddha provided many examples to help you remember that life is short, death is inevitable, and the time of death is uncertain. For instance, he said, "Life is like a flame blown out by the wind, like lightning, a bubble, dewdrops, or a line drawn in the water." Meditating on these examples helps to develop mindfulness of death. Also, keep in mind that no man or woman who has ever lived, no matter how successful, famous, powerful, or holy, has escaped death. Even the Buddha died. Recall as well that the cause of death is birth, and that the moment you were born, you begin to die. The countless momentary deaths of this life lead inevitably to conventional death. Nothing you do can prevent death from happening. Using meditation to develop mindfulness of the impermanence of all things, including your body, feelings, thoughts, perceptions, and consciousness, helps you to think realistically about death. Mindfulness of death arouses feelings of spiritual urgency and is the best way to prepare for a peaceful death and a fortunate rebirth. Superstitious attachment to a dead body makes no sense. Mindfulness of death can help you overcome superstitions. If you have meditated thoroughly on other aspects of mindfulness of the body, breath, four postures, clear comprehension, 32 parts and four elements, and you are emotionally stable and spiritually mature, you should meditate on the stages of the corpse.